Thank you, Robin.
On improving your devotional,
your sadhana bhakti,
in terms of things that are not direct devotional practices, but helpful for those things that are devotional practices, it was much less clear to some than to others in that way. So I want to read, nice to hear it anyway, something from Madhurya Kindambini under the category of Nishtha. So we've been speaking so far mostly about Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti. So in the Anartha Nivritti stage, it leads one next to Nishtha. So here's paragraph written by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur describing this stage of Nishtha. It has two parts. Nishtha means literally steadiness. Nishtha bhakti means steadiness of two types, concerning bhakti directly and concerning elements favorable to bhakti. Fancy nice, or it's our topic. And I didn't even come up with that from reading Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, but it's actually, it's common sense that there are things that help make your devotional practices improve just by making them, those things supportive of devotional practices, better. So he describes that those practices of devotional service, they're in three categories: bodily, vocal, and mental. And of course the mind pulls the other two along. Or you can emphasize the importance of chanting or vocal, and that will help fix the mind and of course the body. So now here is his explanation of steadiness in elements favorable to bhakti refers to steadiness in such qualities as humility and giving respect to others, friendliness and mercy. However, sometimes steadiness in such qualities may be seen in devotees who have not developed in steadiness in bhakti, and the other way around sometimes. In spite of this, by the presence or absence of steadiness in bhakti itself, one should understand the presence or absence of the other qualities. In other words, both have to be there. Inexperienced perception cannot substantiate the truth. This is confirmed by the verses quoted above, which state that the appearance of naishtita bhakti, this is from the second chapter of Canto 1, which state that the appearance of naishtiki bhakti, at that stage the devotee attains a position in which the qualities born of raja and tama guna are absent. So nishtha, that stage is where, to repeat, there's steadiness of two kinds: direct devotional practices and those things that are helpful to direct devotional practices. In that stage there's still some anarthas remaining. Anarthas remain all the way up to the appearance of bhava. It's like one could say, the comparison is given to the rising of the sun. And before the sun actually creeps over the horizon, from the state of darkness to dawn, and then the first morning rays, still there are traces, but when of some lingering darkness or absence of light. But when the sun comes overhead in full brilliance, all darkness is gone. But that's bhava, where all anarthas are gone. So it's said that where the stage of nishtha is present, the traces of anarthas don't have much effect. Still, the possibility is there. Even one is very steady in devotional practice, the possibility is there that one can desist, one can stop devotional practice. It's not possible at the stage of the higher stages, bhava and prema. It's spontaneous. It's too late. No turning back. So, also I wanted to read the very last sentence of this section. It's chapter 4 of Madhurya Kandambani, where Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur is emphasizing effort. Here's the quote. In summary, so this is the summary of the first four chapters, this sentence is, in summary, what has been shown is that the laxity or intensity of effort in the matters of devotional activities, such as hearing and chanting, when they become a fixed practice, manifest correspondingly two types of bhakti, unsteady and steady. So, effort is imperative to bring one to the state where anarthas are removed. An effort in devotional practice, an effort in those things that are helpful or supportive of devotional practice, effort in removing of anarthas. So, spiritual life and laziness go ill together. As one, Krishna says this to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, as the materialist is intensely engaged in his activity, the transcendentalist should be engaged in his activity. Although he has no cause, materially speaking, no cause for engaging in those duties. But the transcendental cause is there. Wanting to awaken this attraction for Krishna. Wanting to, and to do that, I have to rid myself of unwanted things. Everyone, if there's anyone that doesn't have and would like to have one of these little timeline things, I see one hand, two hands. I don't have any more. I just want to know how many more we'll make, because we've made some more today. Okay. One down and one to go. You don't have one. Okay. Except for you two that don't have one, you can look at the page. It's on the right hand side, five impediments to the practices of sadhana bhakti. This is described as coming at the final stage of anartha nivritti. After the four categories of anarthas are dealt with, then still there is this classification of impediments. In Madhurya Kandambani it appears under the category of nishtha, that these five things have to be dealt with. We'll just touch on them, although they're mentioned here. You can look at the list that's here. It starts with drowsiness while hearing and chanting, laya, keeping mundane association, vikshepa. Here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. Fourth paragraph, if you have your Madhurya Kandambani back home somewhere. Very briefly, laya refers to the tendency to sleep during kirtan, shravana and smarana, parentheses, in order of increasing tendency. In other words, it's a lot harder to sleep during kirtan than it is to sleep during your japa. It's easier to sleep during japa. It's more easy to sleep while you're trying to remember. Sound vibration helps keep you awake. So, the tendency for drowsiness
during that period of time is absent when nishta, nishta, is there. So that's at the lower end of these impediments. Then, aprapati. Vikshepa refers to affinity for material topics while performing kirtan or hearing and chanting and remembering. So that's also absent. That means in the anartanivritti stage one has to work on eradicating those things. So it's like as the process of surrender is described. Prabhupada, what are the first two lines of that?
Excuse me?
Anukoyasya, sankalpa, pratikoyasya, vajna. That's it. So, accepting those things favorable, that is, bhajana kriya, all kinds of activities of devotional practice, and things that are, this is part of surrendering to Krishna, things that are, that interfere with that, with the sharpness and steadiness of your hearing and chanting activity. Pratikoyasya Varjanam. They have to be kicked out, swept out, removed, weeded out. So here are the first two of those things that have to be removed, out. Okay, drowsiness, letting the mind wander over material topics, then looks like a lot of people haven't. Here's the attendance sheet. Those of you that didn't mark it, please do. Even when those two things are taken care of, the third is a kind of indifference, a spiritual indifference, aprapati, a take it or leave it indifference. So at the stage of nishtha, the steady stage of steadiness in devotional practice, that indifference is gone. It's on the other side, on the side of when there's an opportunity for hearing and chanting, one's attention becomes very much aroused. Eagerness to hear is there. So one may have to practice or cultivate that. Next, kasaya or kashaya, which means yielding to pride, anger, greed. Desire, flattery. This is one of the problems for someone who has become somewhat accomplished in spiritual practice. One is looking here and there to see how one is being noticed, like something like a child who does some activity and then wants everyone to give some praise. So that's there in Anartha Nivritti also. And the final one, Rasavad, I believe it is. Yeah. Rasasvad. Taste for material enjoyment. Refers to the inability to absorb the mind in kirtan when one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. Nishtha appears in the absence of these faults. As you can see, it's like a balancing, or the presence of one means the absence of the other and vice versa. Yes?
That's also like for Vajna Kriya, Taranga, Ragini, and trying to enjoy the name of the consequences. accessible to performers of Sadhana Bhakti.
No, it's a little different.
You ought to say how it's different from the number that when you're getting enjoying pious activities.
Yeah. The pious activities part is different than what comes from the performance of devotional service. Right? The results of devotional service are different than simply the results of past pious activity. Trying to be the enjoyer of one's past pious activity. There's piety simply in the rendering of devotional service or the hearing of transcendental topics. Punyashravana Kirtana. Do you see the difference, or should I spell it out? If someone has, if a materialist has education, money, some respectability in society, they have their status established, they are reluctant to give that up and turn their attention to God. They're comfortable. They're enjoying the fruits of their past pious activity. So, in this case, someone is engaged in devotional service, and from the result of that, as a result of that devotional service, there is some newly appearing spiritual asset for that person, some notoriety amongst the circle of devotees, or some scholastic ability. One can recite so many verses or lead kirtan so nicely or do this or do that in a devotional context.
There
are, in all cases, this is a material desire.
For one thing, you're attached to spirit, you're attached to spiritual practice.
Okay. Yes? Ahead, Rani.
Is it possible that that scholastic ability that you describe it comes after a devotee?
Is it possible that what?
That ability, like education and scholastic ability and different things like that arise from bhakti.
Yeah.
Is it possible that when that arises from a devotee that it could be like a bit of their pious activities?
Sure.
Is the result of their pious activity?
Well,
I should say a little more. The boys in our school were asking about the initiation when it says the spiritual master takes away your reactions. Does he take away the good as well as the bad one?
No. Oh, as far as scholastic ability and so on, that's a natural byproduct, you could say, of bhakti, jnana and vairagya. For a devotee, our aptitude for hearing topics about Krishna produces a natural knowledge, a devotional knowledge. But because it's attached to bhakti, not because it's, I want some knowledge and therefore I'm going to kick away my material entanglement, or I'll get some fame and notoriety for it. The tendency for either one of those things is unwanted. So, it's the tendency for those things that one gets relief from by the process of devotional service, including the process of initiation.
So when it said that one of the four pitfalls of
four categories of anarthas.
Yeah, right. One of them was the results of your pious past pious activities.
Right.
I was kind of imagining that after you've been a devotee for 7 years, you had some pious
before
to become suddenly rich, and that might prove an impediment.
Sure. Wanting to
mean that
the enjoying spirit is pretty powerful. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, we should never forget that the embodied soul has a very strong attraction for enjoyment. So we can try to enjoy in all kinds of ways. Once the grosser ways are alleviated, then the other ones become more obvious or more prominent. And the one who is on the path of Uttama Bhakti, which is our topic, and one or our way of life, then one has to be conscious of those other subtler forms of trying to be an enjoyer of material energy.
We can't be sure whether the wealth and the respect and the fame that suddenly pops up in the devotee is due to past life activities or arose from their bhakti.
Or both. And in any event, whether it's this or that or the combination of the two, the devotee is advised to not to try to dedicate those things in Krishna's service. And conversely, not to be the separate enjoyer of those things. And so, just to carry over on this theme of effort that's necessary, I want to read this sentence again because it's a very, very important sentence. Summarizes all of what our topic has been thus far. In summary, what has been shown is that the laxity or intensity of effort in the matters of devotional activities, that's bhajana kriya, such as hearing and chanting, when they become a fixed, practiced, manifest correspondingly two types of bhakti, unsteady and steady. So, Mother Vijay, you here? Not here. This is the answer to her question this morning. Pass it on to her. So, there's the comment is that there's something of a domino effect when effort is being made. When you try to make an effort strongly in one area, the tendency to make strong effort in other areas also follows, or how much other things are out of place also becomes a little more obvious. When you try to improve in one area, it's hard to move forward if so many other areas are also out of place. And therefore the positive efforts in devotional practices have to be attended to in areas that are not direct devotional practices. When we were visiting in Denver, we had several classes. This was the topic we were discussing. From the verse that we read this morning in the Bhagavatam class, I wanted to read something that's very similar from Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto. And it runs parallel also with the topic in Gopi Pranadana's course. Always we find that when we have these institutes, topics are kind of running in parallel streams, merging into the ocean of devotional service. So, as in Gopi Pranadana's course, there are many prerequisites for studying a Vedanta, so we're talking about the prerequisite for entering into pure devotional service. In Kapila's response to his mother, there's many things that one must do in the preliminary way. Very quickly he just casts aside the conceptions of I and mine and then identifies the sadhu and then associate with that person. So in the second canto, chapter 2, text 2, we'll read a few verses. The way of presentation of Vedic sounds is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of the people to meaningless things, like the heavenly kingdoms. The conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures but actually do not relish any tangible happiness in such places. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor, here we are, endeavor over, only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. And then many verses of living simply. When there are earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering or skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? And so on and so on. Living simply. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the Super Soul situated in one's own heart by His omnipotency. Because He is the Almighty Personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, He is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping Him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. So devotional service cannot be taken up by persons who are, Prahlad Maharaj says, Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova. Persons who are maintaining their material conception of life, they can't even take up devotional service. So there are many things that on the taking up side, one has to look at the side of what I have to let go of. Just like on the topic of sadhu sangha. So many indications are there that one should take the benefit of sadhus, their association, and give up the association of others. I noticed that in many of the comments that you've made from last night, that this is one of the factors, that things that are helpful is dealing with things that are harmful properly. So these both factors are there in sadhana bhakti. We read one quote from the 10th chapter of Canto 2, where Shukadeva is describing how although there may be a prominent quality, even if one may have goodness, the other two are there, and due to the mixture, then there's automatically three. And when there's contact with the other, any of the other two, then the behavior of those other two will also be manifest. And with that behavior, then there's more reactions according to those lower modes that one will have to act out. So, therefore, the right association is imperative if one wants to bring to a close one's material existence. Then, carefully seeking out the right association, carefully avoiding wrong association. So, I wanted now to halfway done again. We'll switch to. I'd like to finish up yesterday's and hopefully today's points that you brought out. Now, while you're actually chanting, where you and how you chant. So, here's the first couple that are I'll mention. They're exact opposites. Some said that going to a very quiet place where I can chant without any distraction, that's very helpful. And some said chanting in the association of other devotees, very helpful to increase my concentration. So there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in Harinam Chintamani,
indication of both is there. Particularly, it says, when chanting in, to help fix the mind, chant in the company of someone whose mind is fixed, someone who has an appreciation of the holy name, and their chanting exudes that attraction for chanting. And just tell a little detail. If you visit Jagannath Puri, you can ask one of the local people to show you the house where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya lived and where he performed his chanting. It's a pretty amazing place. There are walls. He chanted in a room within a room within a room, and the walls are like a foot and a half thick. So complete silence. And Krishna Kripa would like to go there and chant his chant. And in Vrindavan, when you go on Vrindavan Parikram, near, I forget the place, the place where Raghava Pandit performed his chanting is a cave underground. To get in, only one person can fit. So it takes a while on a parikram to go see them. And if somebody gets claustrophobia, they're finished. It's underground, it's just a little hole. You climb underground, you go back, and it's like a little cave. And there he sat and chanted his japa. No distractions. So, but chant, at the same time, chanting in the presence of others who are very enlivened in chanting, their japa or in kirtan, same, it helps the attentiveness. So either or a combination, but again, the main feature here is that the mind has to go to Krishna. The mind has to go to the holy name. Here's some other comments. Let me get through the comments and then we'll take your supplemental things. Not talking to, this is a nice rule, personal policy of not talking to others while chanting. Unless it's completely necessary. I know of one sannyasi who does that while taking prasadam. Just as a rule, from the time the first morsel goes in till the last, till he's finished, no conversation. So that the proper attention can go to that activity of honoring prasadam. So it's not just an act of, you know, running something by the tongue, but it's an act of devotion. So attempting to keep the mind fixed on the holy name. Several persons indicated not taking prasadam, not having breakfast, until they've completed their rounds. Just as a matter of discipline, one comment was that it helps me to appreciate the greater significance of spiritual nourishment above bodily nourishment. So with that in mind, keeping that principle. Technique-wise, there are some comments about say more technical things of how quickly one chants, how many mantras one chants per breath. I've actually had several devotees in the past describe this, how not necessarily keeping a little stopwatch in front of you, but keeping some idea of how long your chanting takes you. Some I've even seen with a stopwatch. And controlling the pace of chanting by speed and at the same time making sure that pronunciation is very clear. I know the Prabhupada has said something about that directly. Chanting swiftly but with clear pronunciation, this helps capture the mind. It works. It's a very effective technique. Chanting swiftly, but not so swiftly you can't hear every syllable. So where that balance is, keeping your mind on the holy name. if you listen to the pace of Prabhupada's chanting on that, the Prabhupada's japa tape, chanting pretty quickly. You know, I remember, I'm sure Sureshwar can confirm this also, at the time that Sureshwar was initiated, along the same week, I was also initiated, and Prabhupada would chant on our beads, sitting on the Vyasasan, while we were also waiting for him to finish. We chanted on everyone's beads, and there was 10 nishas per day, and he chanted those 10 sets of beads in, you know, 45 minutes or 40 minutes, 10 rounds in that much time. So he was chanting swiftly. So sometimes, if I also heard in a recording of Prabhupada saying this, that in the beginning we may take 2 hours to chant our rounds, and later with practice an hour and a half. I don't chant that swiftly myself, but that's what Prabhupada said. So chanting swiftly helps to capture the mind. Or when you're chanting swiftly, if you're not going to just chant blurry, the mind has to be very alert. Some other points is just preventing the mind from wandering ahead to the activities of the day that you'll have to do, and trust in the holy name, that the holy name will give you the strength and the clarity, etc., if you simply bring your attention to the holy name, and then the time to consider those day's activities will be well utilized. Some other comments about just variegating in the course of chanting, sometimes intermittently reading something, then closing the book and again chanting, or walking, sitting, some variegation in voice inflection. These are just techniques that different devotees are using to help increase their attentiveness. And another comment in this regard is, while taking part in kirtan, to keep in mind equally the importance of the holy name while chanting in kirtan as a way of enhancing one's japa chanting, also attentiveness in japa chanting.
When you were talking before about chanting in the association of devotees or chanting by oneself, one devotee told me that practically the way it was phrased, privately imperative, that you should chant at least a couple rounds by yourself so that you can.
What is that? Does that mean the persons that chant with others, that they're not going to make it?
Well, it's just saying just at least a couple rounds by yourself so you can make sure that you're, because like the idea was that if you're chanting with others, that's very good, but perhaps because you're with others, you might not hear what you're doing while you're thinking of what you think you're hearing. You might not be there where you chant a couple rounds just to test how it
goes. Well, usually if you stay in the temple room long enough, you'll find yourself in an empty temple room.
Actually, one conversation I read with Sri Prabhupada was speaking in Nairobi, he noticed that someone wasn't in the temple room chanting, and he says, where are they? And there's another point in that conversation, but the point in regards to this class is that, no, he should be here, or all the devotees chanting in the temple room. So there's cases where Prabhupada actually wanted the devotees in the temple room, not alone.
One of the japa tapes also was chanting also in words. Somebody, I think, in the name. They're figuring out where someone is, and then it's like, oh, it's great. Okay. You want to know where somebody was, and they're just chanting.
Yeah, there's one story like this of in Mayapur, Prabhupada's insistence on keeping the property that Krishna had given immaculate. And there was some objection that the cleaning time was being assigned during japa time, and Prabhupada's answer was that is as good as chanting. That's not to say those persons that were cleaning, they didn't have to complete their chanting. As far as possible during the early morning, this is one of the... Relax. Okay. One of the points that many devotees have indicated is rising early. taking rest. Again and again, the comment is that they found very effective is chanting early in the morning, chanting before Mangal Arati, or chanting as many rounds as possible before Mangal Arati, rising early. Early morning hours are particularly effective. Okay. Other?
It's a comment. I asked a question. Like when I'm chanting, sometimes I find disturbed. I feel disturbed when I'm like in the midst of the last day of chanting, same room. So let's say I plug my ears up with the plug, but it feels impersonal actually.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right.
Well, you would
rise. It's more comfortable, but it feels impersonal. So what is it? Because it seems like even when we go through the pain that we try to be in association with others and here with them, it may be a little more difficult, but the result is...
Like you're trying to get the best of both, be with the devotees but without them.
Yeah, I think that chanting with others improves our ability to control our mind, because it's like another test to find out how much we can concentrate on work. Because I remember when I started chanting with other devotees, they couldn't hear my voice. Mind was switching to others instead of listening to my chant. But now I can see that I improved. And so it's like similar while you're chanting and some other thoughts are coming to your mind. And at the same time you realize that you are not thinking of chanting, you are not listening to the mantra.
When I first joined, there was one devotee named Gopinath. We used to go to the noisiest possible place to chant his Gayatri. We go out in Sankirtan and go to the construction site. Just like, you know, something like you're saying, just to really make sure that he could keep his mind fixed despite all difficulties. There's something to both. In all of these comments, I think we'll just move on, because these comments about the value, it's scripturally and in terms of evidence and practical experience, there's value in both. Here's some other points I'd like to bring up. I have several sheets of paper I would really like to finish. So we can close the book on this chapter here. Other points in improving chanting, not specifically while chanting, but related to chanting. Here's one comment: to think of attentiveness and the quality of devotion during kirtan. Oh, I mentioned this, that enhances my japa chanting. Meditating on the strength. Here's another one: is meditating on the strength I need to derive from my chanting in order to perform my service for the day. If I have to go on sankirtan or have some very difficult service to do, I need strength. So let me be driven by that, by taking shelter of the holy name. We mentioned associating with Haridas Thakur and Harinam Chintamani says, associating with persons who have strong faith in chanting. And one devotee commented, hearing from those that have strong faith in the importance of chanting and then remembering their instructions while chanting or engaging in devotional activity, staying very close to that source of strong faith by physical proximity and also by hearing and remembering their instructions. One person said, dancing during kirtan. Prabhupada also indicated this. When dancing in kirtan, I can't remember the exact quote, but something to the effect of one raising one's arms and dancing during kirtan, one's elevated to Vaikuntha. course, we can get on and off the Vaikuntha platform very quickly. But it's very, it's not just physically invigorating, it's transcendentally pleasing to Krishna. Trying to remember the goal of chanting and trying to keep in mind the whole philosophy of awakening our love for Krishna. So, one other section, then we'll take some more questions here. Reading techniques. So in addition to, and some comments here also apply to deity worship, process of archana. Here are some. Fixing a minimum amount of reading daily, memorizing verses. Specifically, the comment was memorizing, one comment was, several said memorizing verses helps to keep the philosophy clear. Memorizing verses with others. Someone else indicated reading of verses and discussing the verses outside of class with others. Singing songs, Vaishnava songs, of course, very nice. And memorizing. Memorizing those songs. Those verses and those songs and those verses will stick in your mind throughout the day and throughout the week if you're absorbed in that activity. Perhaps my experience is, in cases sometimes even more so than the regular verses in Bhagavatam class or even study done on your own. These activities done with others have a lot of potency. Some comments about studying, some privately and some like a group study effort, some mixture of those. Almost uniformly, the voice was, there's many with the voice of reading early in the morning, rising early and doing anything early in the morning, devotionally, very effective. One devotee said reading the section that he's studying 10 times over. He finds this very good as a study practice. And I know one devotee who memorizes what he reads. He's in the process of memorizing Bhagavad Gita. And he can sit there and just, you know, spill out all kinds of nectar from, he's saying, from memorizing these verses, these purports, I've learned the following things that before, when just reading them, I didn't understand, and then all this nectar starts spilling out. So it's very, very effective. Going very, very deeply. So this is a little bit on the topic of what we were discussing the other day, quantitative and qualitative, and again, they both have their place. To continuously chant, or to continuously read, or to go very, very deeply, repeat and repeat and repeat and memorize something. Both have their value. Another is taking notes while reading or taking notes during class. They say, mundane studies have been done about retention in university classrooms. Note taking during class more effective for retention. Reviewing those notes after class increases attention or retention a lot. And in our case, we can discuss also with others things that we've been reading. So this often happens in amongst, I can tell you this, amongst sannyasis, that there's all kinds of correspondence going on back and forth where we're discussing with one another topics that we've been reading and exploring and appreciating with one another and, you know, discussing in an ongoing fashion. We still have 10 whole minutes, and I would like to cover additional, or say, attendant features in improving sadhana bhakti. So we have. Does anybody want to comment on any of these other things before we move on? Or can we move on? Just one personal comment in this whole category is that there wasn't nearly as strong a response in the second category. I don't know if you got a, you had extra homework to do from some other class or something. I suspect it's because we don't appreciate sufficiently. I mean, is it a description of our training in general? And we're very, very strong on our hearing and chanting, more so at least than appreciating the importance of attendant things that help that hearing and chanting. And as a result, there are difficulties in Vaishnava relationships and divorces and all kinds of things, where it would certainly be helpful to keep those institutions of Vaishnava life together, in addition to hearing and chanting, to see to these attendant features. Here are some of the categories. We heard from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur what he meant by those things that assist direct devotional practices. And many of you hit on them. Many more of you didn't. Here's some just Vaishnava relationships, that is, rendering of menial service to others, and in general, Shrinivas Maharaj has this practice. It's interesting living in close proximity with him, because he does it on a daily basis. One of the daily things he does is he goes out of his way in three different circumstances that arise in the course of the day's activity, or he'll go out of his way to render some service, some menial service to the Vaishnavas. As a regulative practice. And he's been doing it for years. So this is sadhana, and it's an attendant feature. It's not, you know, he could say, I could be sitting and reading, memorizing a Bhagavad Gita verse, or something, or something, or something. But instead he's doing these other, and because it's helpful, supportive of direct devotional activities, such as hearing and chanting. Another few, punctuality. Some were speaking of just doing things, like especially with deity worship, but setting a schedule. When one is supposed to be doing a certain thing at a certain time, one is there, punctually. As a matter of personal discipline and commitment, we know from the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he lived his life that way. Certain number of minutes of this, and certain number of hours of that, and with a stopwatch, he kept track of time. Very, very punctual, and very regulated goes together with punctual, but there's some slight difference there. Fasting, humility, during some part of the day, putting in writing different ideas or thoughts or realizations. Prabhupada encouraged like this, writing one's realization daily as a daily sadhana or discipline. It's not in and of itself a hearing and chanting activity necessarily, but expressing one's thought in this manner. Other activities include, many persons wrote, not just devotees who are Sankirtan devotees, but many other devotees. The Sankirtan devotees might be pleased to hear this. But engaging in preaching whenever opportunity arises. If one is considering like that, let me take whatever opportunity arises, let me take it to preach. And that the comment is that helps as a self-enthuser in my devotional practices. And it also helps me to preach to myself. Remember the philosophy, someone said. Keep our philosophy and the purpose in mind. Physical fitness, well-being, health and exercise and diet and all those things. Help in sadhana. Keeping very clean, where there's not only the space is clean, but everything's in its place and it's clutter is gone, it's simple. Helps. The category of avoiding things, I don't want to just get into like a Gatling gun and just repeat it, you know, say these things. It's not just not doing any, it's not having any effect. It's important to know how, well, here's prajalpa. I was mentioning avoiding bad association, so prajalpa is the result of bad association, as much as in this morning's verse, hearing Krishna Katha is the result of good association. Personally keeping oneself free from idleness, if there's some way that I can utilize my time more fully, let me do that. Somehow, if there's a little gap, let me have I'll have a book or beads or prayers to recite or something. One very interesting comment was avoiding dissatisfaction. Really caught my attention. Because it's something that with a little self-discipline, one can easily do. Not just a Pollyanna method. It's thinking of where real satisfaction is. That's how you take care of dissatisfaction. Disturbing elements or dissatisfying conditions can be easily taken care of by placing one's mind on the devotional side. Unresolved devotee conflicts. Avoiding that, avoiding just leaving lingering conflicts in an Vaishnava manner, dealing with these things. It helps one sadhana. I'm surprised, but there weren't very many comments in terms of grihastha needs, seeing that they're taken care of, or the problems are dealt with, or the positive things are dealt with. Because that can be very, if that's not straight, it can be very, very disturbing. How can one perform sadhana properly if one is in perpetual anxiety? This is one of these supportive factors. A few other notes, and if I can open the floor here. Utilization of time. For whenever possible, here and there, hearing of recorded lectures or bhajans, or turning to the scripture, turning to recitation, memory, recitation of different prayers, entering into a devotional mood. Becoming internally absorbed even in the midst of daily duties. One comment was there, trying to see some continuity. Actually, there were two comments like this. Trying to see continuity in your devotional service. This is on the long-term versus short-term idea. One comment was there. That if you're just in the middle of your day-to-day things, you have considering where you're going long term, it's not very difficult to get the sense they're not making progress. But progress is there if one looks at the overall picture. Okay, so there's more to. I have other points to make. I'll open up the floor any points for discussion. Comment about it?
Yes, I mean,
there's also, in addition to the factor of surrender to Krishna, natural remembrance will come. In nectar devotion, there are sections on remembrance as a regulative practice, trying to remember. Bhaktisiddhanta said that committing scriptural passages to memory, not necessarily just verses, but the Siddhanta of scripture, and then